welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is my podcast partner and producer of the SemiWiki Semiconductor Insiders Podcast, Mike Gianfagna.
Hey, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Mike is not only a semiconductor expert, but a good friend and an excellent producer. So thank you for all your help, Mike. Can you believe we're at the 100th episode?
You know, this went by like a flash. I clearly remember us talking on the first podcast, and here we are at 100. It was a lot of fun. It's been quite a ride. Met some really interesting people along the way, I have to say.
Yeah, you know, what we've always said about the semiconductor industry is it's full of just incredibly brilliant people because we solve some very hard problems. And, you know, getting our chance to meet these people and spend time with them has just been an incredible experience.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's been quite an adventure with some of the folks we've talked to and some of the insights. The comment that I recall people say a lot in the semiconductor industry is that the difficult things take a long time and the impossible stuff takes just a little longer. And that's been true time and time again.
Yeah. And, you know, when we did our first podcast, we probably said more than we should have, but it's just an exciting time to be in the semiconductor industry. But looking back over the last 18 months, it is even more exciting now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah. So we look back and look at the top topics that we covered, the most listened to topics. And number one, the semiconductor shortage. You know, everybody knows us now. It's been an exciting time, and it's been a very good learning experience. I think we all now know how important semiconductors are to the world, to the economy, and seeing all these semiconductor CEOs on the White House lawn, I think it was just an incredible sight.
It underscored how much things have changed in the short time that we've been doing these podcasts. Is to think that it would be center stage at the White House, you know, that's pretty heady stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So in regards to the shortage, Mike, were you personally affected by the chip shortage?
You know, I was, and I still am. I moved into a new house and in December, and I'm still waiting for all my kitchen appliances. Some of them are still loaners, and that was direct result of the chip shortage. So yeah, it did hit home. They're promising us our range and range hood sometime in August. But you know, August is wearing on and no one's calling me back. So God knows when it'll finally show up. But yeah, this hit home.
Did you try to buy a car? I mean, I think people who tried to buy cars were probably the most affected.
Yeah, you know, we got lucky there. We did, my wife fell in love with a plug-in hybrid BMW. It had just come off the truck. It had just been delivered that day. So she said, I want it. And they said, well, good for you because five other people called, but you're here and they're not. So she got to buy it. But actually, when we paid for it, what was fun about it is they reduced the price because they removed several options that there was no semiconductors to fuel those options. So they gave us a rebate on the options that didn't exist on the car because they couldn't. So yeah, we saw it that way. It was not necessarily a negative thing. The options they took off were goofy ones anyhow that I don't think we would have used. So that's all good.
Yeah, car buying is a new experience now.
And
I don't know if we're going to go back to having hundreds of these cars on lots and, you know, people getting to negotiate for price. But, you know, we had a similar experience. We bought a washer and dryer and they said, well, if you want Wi-Fi on the washer and dryer, you're going to have to wait 6 months. But we couldn't think of a reason why we need our washer and dryer on Wi-Fi. So we went ahead and got just a standard washer and dryer and got it the next day, actually. But yeah, you know, there were shortages. We did see it. But, you know, at the TSMC symposium, the CEO of TSMC, C.C. Wei, did a keynote and he told a joke and he has a very biting sense of humor. He's really a brilliant, brilliant and funny guy. And he said he's been getting calls from all the automotive executives pretending like they're his best friend and trying to cut in line and get their wafers sooner. And he said, yeah, you know, I just got a call from this CEO pressing me to get their 25 wafers out quicker. And, you know, TSMC is more used to getting, you know, 25,000 wafer orders. And it's just kind of funny is, you know, what really happened. I think the chip shortage really was more of a supply chain issue. You know, what really happened is the automotive companies and other companies cut their orders and, you know, in anticipation of a big drop after the pandemic started. And we didn't really experience that big drop. In fact, I think we experienced opposite of that. And, you know, once you tell TSMC you don't want the wafers, then they reassign them to somebody else. And then getting back in line is a difficult thing. And it's not just wafers. You know, it's a supply chain issue, as you know. You know, your hood, I don't think your range hood has a lot of chips in it. But getting things through the supply chain and, you know, the bill of materials on some of these products are just so huge. And one little tiny material or part or, you know, some people call it the golden screw, you know, if it's missing, then the whole product doesn't ship. So yeah. That, and, you know, people complain, the semiconductors, sure, but the bottom line is, you know, we had plenty of wafers. It's just people did not allocate them properly. And a lot of inventories were, you know, just-in-time inventory, and that's a smart way to run the business. But when you're not able to get parts, just-in-time inventory, you know, can really hurt you. And now we have just-in-case inventory, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this whole thing has been kind of at one level amusing because, you know, and you've had folks we've on the podcast that have talked about this as well, the cycles that are happening in semiconductor. You know, the quote I like is that, you know, supply and demand in the semiconductor industry are in sync for 25 minutes every 7 years, and then it's off. It's always a glut or a shortage, and it's cyclic, and it's normal, and it happens all the time. But this one was sort of a perfect storm between the serious supply chain disruptions that COVID produced and the incredible dependency on semiconductors for products that didn't used to really need them all that much. Everything kind of came together in a perfect storm that made this a big deal. So, you know, the fact that it was so debilitating is a testament to semiconductors and how enabling they are for the world around us. And, you know, I think everybody's going to focus a little bit more on the supply chain issues here so that it doesn't synchronize for 7 minutes every 7 years. But, you know, it's a little bit more robust and a little bit more predictable now. It has to be, right?
Oh, of course. You know, as they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And we definitely have a much stronger supply chain than before. So topic number two, of course, is our favorite, Moore's Law. Moore's Law, I think, made our industry somewhat famous and keeps us in the news because it's something people like to say, Moore's Law is dead, right? I think Moore's Law has died, you know, maybe 20 times now. And but it's always a popular topic of conversation.
Yeah, it's something that a lot of people talk about. And, you know, we've looked at this on various podcast episodes, and I've looked at this personally on a lot of the work that I do as well. And what's interesting here is it is true that Moore's Law is slowing down a bit. That's a fact. You know, it's taking longer to get to the next node. It's more difficult to get to the next node. And when you plow through all that stuff and finally get there, the power, performance, and area kick you get isn't quite as dramatic as it was before. That said, Moore's Law is the fuel that keeps the entire semiconductor industry running. So it's absolutely critical that this keep going. What's different now is that it's not just about getting to the next process node, which I find an exciting time. You know, if you think about it, for decades, a lot of the engineering community and the system design community kind of got a free ride, and the foundry engineers did the heavy lifting, meaning if you had a great chip and you could just get it to that next process node, you'd get a power, performance, and area kick, you'd stay competitive, you'd call it a day, and you'd move on. Well, that's not necessarily the case anymore. Now you have to do it the old-fashioned way. You have to think about different innovations, about multiple processes, parallel processing, multiple purpose-built accelerators, you know, 2.5D and 3D multi-die systems design, and trying to get this all together to produce a product that's competitive. Moore's Law is still a critical driver, but there are other things now at play that are required to really build a world-class product. So the product development process has gotten more complex, but the result are incredible products that literally are changing the world. So in my opinion, it's all good.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Moore's Law, it was just an observation actually of process density, right? So process density would double every couple of years. But really, lately we've been looking at it on a chip level. Like if you look at the Apple SoCs from 10 years ago, they had less than a billion transistors. But the most recent one, or the A15, has over 15 billion transistors. So, you know, over 10 years, you went from less than a billion to 15 billion on a single chip in a similar die area. You know, the A7, the less than a billion one, had 102 square millimeter die space, and the most recent one is 107. And, you know, that's not very much difference in size, but you have more than 15 times the density of transistors. So there's a lot that can be done on the design side. And I think what we've been talking about a lot lately is on the packaging side, right? Mm-hmm. You know, chiplets, right?
Yeah.
And multi-die packaging. And so, you know, at the chip level, Moore's Law definitely lives. And that's where we're focusing. It's not just on, you know, how many transistors you can fit, you know, within a certain die area.
Yeah, no, that's true. The innovation is it has multi dimensions. Without that Moore's Law trajectory, there's a lot of advanced products. You make a good point about what Apple is up to. They just, you know, they wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that trajectory. But there's with chiplets and multiple technologies coming together into a single package, the degrees of freedom have become far greater, and the amount of innovation that you can apply is also far greater. So it's pretty exciting times. You know, if you think about a lot of these new intelligent systems require sensing and require data from the outside world. Well, sensors don't necessarily need to be integrated onto a 2-nanometer, you know, gargantuan chip. They need to be very, very precise, and they need to be in the right locations to sense what they're trying to sense. And that put together with the gargantuan chips in one complex package turns out to be a pretty exciting set of combination of technologies to build some products that, you know, honestly we haven't seen before.
Yeah, coming up, you're going to be seeing some disaggregated chips where they are chiplets. And not only are they chiplets, but they're from multiple manufacturing. So, you know, Intel, of course, is using TSMC, and you're going to see some Intel CPU tiles integrate with some maybe some TSMC GPU tiles and maybe a base SoC. And so, you know, not only does that continue with Moore's Law, but it shortens the design cycle, right? Because you can yield these chiplets much easier than these huge monolithic dies. And so AMD is doing it as well, and some other companies are going to be following suit. But you're going to see Moore's Law continue based on these chiplets and this packaging innovation that we've seen, you know, over the last few years. And, you know, one of the eye-opening things that happened in the last maybe 10 years was that TSMC went into packaging themselves. And, you know, it's just amazing the forethought they had to the foundry business that packaging would be so important and so integral into the wafer manufacturing.
Yeah, it's a critical part of the value chain, and a company like TSMC is not going to want to give that up. So yeah, of course they double down on that, because the packaging and the silicon become kind of one thing. It's a unified strategy for packing lots of technology into a small space, which, you know, that's Moore's Law. We've been doing that for a long time. But now the dimensions of that packing bunch of stuff into a small space has a lot more footnotes on it and a lot more challenges and a lot more degrees of freedom. You know, you mentioned about chiplets. The three best words are known good die. Boy, that certainly takes a lot of risk out of things. If you can buy known good die and integrate those together, that's a whole lot better than buying RTL IP and then trying to put it together yourself and hoping the thing works when you get it back from the fab.
Yeah, you know, three words also are chiplets are cheating.
Yeah.
And I may have said that a while back, but it's a good cheat. I mean, it's really going to spur design starts. You know, it shortens the design cycle. It cheapens the design cost. It really is an incredible technology. And based on the conferences that I've attended live, by the way, this year, chiplets, you know, innovations will continue for sure.
Yeah.
So the next topic, CHIPS Act, Mike, corporate welfare or innovation enabler?
I view it as a tremendous step in the right direction. Let's be clear. You know, what does it cost to build an advanced wafer fab facilities? It's, you know, it's of order 100 billion or so, right? So the CHIPS Act is pumping half that amount into the semiconductor industry. So on a dead reckoning basis, you know, has the US government solved all known problems with, you know, enough money to build half a advanced fab? Well, of course not. And that wasn't really, in my opinion, or should have been the goal of this whole thing. The goal of the whole thing is to really raise visibility and awareness of the importance, the strategic nature of semiconductor manufacturing and the know-how behind this thing, and start to infuse money into the industry. And what that does is that money will spawn additional projects that will be funded by other sources, and the whole thing becomes a snowball. And I think you'll see a lot of robust activity as a result of what this with the, what this initial seed money from the US government did. It'll create a much bigger landscape of innovation, which is great.
Yeah, I agree. It's just another point of making semiconductors at the forefront of the news and people's minds of it's very important. And yeah,
Yeah.
$52 billion is not going to make or break anybody. I would like to see a lot of that go towards memory. You know, I think the U.S. only produces 2% of the memory chips worldwide, and that's Micron, of course. And they're up against some really heavily funded big players. But I think people forget how important memory is, because without memory, you know, we're sunk as a logic provider.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's great. I think it's good PR. I think it's good to get everybody on the same page of how important this is. But you know, creating a whole semiconductor industry inside the United States, you know, reshoring this whole thing, that's kind of, you know, a broken promise, because that's just not going to happen. It takes a world to create a chip, right? And you know, the fabs are only one part of it. But it's nice. It's a good place to start.
No, I agree. There needs to be more of a center of gravity in the US for sure. We've lost more than we should have, and we can bring it back. That's certainly possible. You know, your comment about memory is spot on. I mean, memory is kind of the fuel for everything. I mean, AI is a ubiquitous technology, and AI doesn't work without massive amounts of memory. So we'll start there. And there's lots of other things like that will lead to memory being a critical enabler. So yeah, we do need to improve that. But I also agree with your comment that the semiconductor ecosystem is a worldwide kind of thing. You know, we're all in this together. Not everybody, every country can't be expert on everything. It just doesn't work. There's a codependence here that will never go away. Now, can we balance it a little better? You bet. And that's the beginning of what the CHIPS Act is doing, I think, is to help to balance it a little bit better. But we're still dependent on each other. And you know, the international trade rules and the dependency between countries is very real, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and all the semiconductor CEOs on the White House lawn doesn't hurt either, right?
That's for sure, yeah.
So let's talk about the foundry landscape, another important topic that we've talked about quite a bit. And the real news is that TSMC and Samsung now have a new competitor, which is Intel, in the leading edge foundry business. Were you surprised when Intel jumped back in?
I have been counting. I think this is maybe the fourth time that Intel is in the foundry business, fourth or fifth. I don't know. I lost track. But I wasn't surprised. I think that this time is different, though. It is fundamentally different. I mean, if you look at the past times that Intel has been in and out of the foundry business and in and out of the ASIC business, for that matter, it all had to do with just balancing fab capacity. When they had fab capacity, they were a foundry. And when they needed fab capacity for their own internal products, they were not a foundry. So that's not really, that's a tactical strategy. There's nothing wrong with it, but it had some interesting effects on some of their customers over the years. But what's happening right now, and again, we're going back to what's happened at the White House, the whole strategic nature of semiconductor manufacturing and the raw technology required to keep the US in the right place has become really, really heightened, and really the visibility is much higher. And Intel is a company with a tremendous amount of core competency in this area. So I think they see it, and the fact that, you know, you have a guy running Intel now who really understands the technology certainly doesn't hurt. But I think the company is got their sights set on a much bigger place in the world and a much more impactful place in the semiconductor industry. And I think it's a good thing.
I agree with that 100%. I was not a fan of the last Intel attempt at the foundry business. I really gave it, you know, very poor marks. This one, I give very high marks. You know, I've
Yeah.
spent a lot of time with them now, and everybody wants choices. And you know, the foundry business, you have TSMC, and then you have not TSMC. So you know, Samsung has been really focusing on the not TSMC business, people who want, you know, a dual source. So Intel, they're definitely going to have a chance at the not TSMC business, and I think they've already gotten some. They signed a deal with MediaTek for 16 nanometer. But I think when Gate-All-Around comes around, I mean, FinFET, the FinFET battle is over. TSMC won. Let's just, you know, call it right now. But when Gate-All-Around comes out, I actually give Intel an advantage. And I think they will be able to carve out a nice technology-driven market space rather than the not TSMC. So I have really high hopes. I mean, we all need choices. We used to have five or maybe six choices when it came to foundries. You know, we had all sorts of choices. Now we, you know, we're down to one or two. Boy, three is a nice view. And I really am a big fan of the Intel Foundry services, and I wish them well. And Intel Foundry has stacked the deck. They've hired people that I've known for years, that I've worked with for years, from TSMC, from Samsung, from Global Foundries. This really is a whole new deck of cards here, and I think they've played it quite well. Final topic, Mike, near and dear to our hearts, EDA, IP, revenues. What is going on, Mike? We have been in the EDA industry for maybe 40 years, let's say 30 or 40 years. Have we ever seen anything like this? We have grown double digits over the last dozen or so quarters. I mean, it is crazy. What's going on, Mike?
Yeah, it's, you know, the word juggernaut comes to mind. You know, we were, I did a little research on this one before our podcast, and this is somewhat amusing. You know, we started covering these reports from the semi organization now that's publishing the old reports that used to be from EDAC, right? So I'm looking at this, and the very first one that I found here, you know, you picked it up in 2020 and you said EDA appears to have COVID immunity. ESD Alliance reports a strong Q2. Then we fast forward to Q3 and I picked that one up and I said ESD Alliance report presents an upbeat snapshot that is up and to the right, of course. So that was good. And I showed a little chart that indeed was up and to the right. Then we go to the next one and I started struggling. I said, okay, the juggernaut continues as the revenue report for Q4 is outstanding. And then the next one, I wasn't sure what to do. So I put a rocket ship in there and I said, is EDA unstoppable? And then the one after that, ESD Alliance, double-digit growth, the hits just keep coming. And then the final one was around the double-digit growth in Q3 2021 and the fact that EDA is finally getting the respect it deserves, because what was reported there was the percentage of EDA revenue against semiconductor actually had grown substantially, which, you know, was something that we all kind of lamented, is that the fuel for semiconductor was such a small part of the overall business, but it grew. So, you know, at that point, I think appropriately, you made the observation that maybe we should turn this into a podcast, and you have interviewed Wally since as a podcast, which I think is much better than trying to come up with yet another hyperbolic headline for a blog. You can get those the material straight from Wally, who always has insights and, you know, new information. The guy's a fountainhead of information in so many different directions. So, you know, we've been following this for a while now, and it just doesn't seem to stop. Now, you know, there's been forecasts of something of a downturn next year, maybe. Some people think it will, some people think it won't. What that does to EDA, we shall see, because what we've seen in times past is when the semiconductor industry has a downturn, a lot of companies correctly double down on their R&D to be ready when the downturn comes back out, so they continue to do advanced product development even more during the downturn. So EDA just might be completely unstoppable. I don't know. But it's been remarkable to watch. And IP is the same way. By the way, with what's happening in chiplets, I think the whole IP industry is ripe for yet another phase of its existence, another chapter, where the IP industry is going to fuel a lot of these chiplet strategies and these chiplet deliverables. So, you know, it's nothing but good news, frankly. And it's been pretty exciting. And for being in the industry so long, to finally see it find its stride and really become the powerhouse or the fuel for all this innovation is appropriate and gratifying.
Yeah, it's nice to get recognition for all the years of hard work, because you and I were here when the EDA business started, right? When it first spun out of semiconductor companies. But, you know, I think the chip shortage really helped EDA quite a bit, because people are realizing that, you know, their companies must take control over the silicon, similar to what Apple did years ago, and they're using the Apple model. But so many people are designing their own chips now, and the automotive guys definitely are on board because they don't want to get caught, you know, holding the bag again. And so I think, you know, it's a perfect storm type of thing. And if you look at EDA, it really is a tale of good things to come because everybody is, you know, designing chips. They're buying new software. SemiWiki has been similar. We've seen the domains of that hit SemiWiki explode. I mean, you know, we used to just have Tesla. Now we have all the car companies reading our site. And, you know, over the last 3 years, over the pandemic, you know, our membership has doubled. We're over 150,000 registered members and you know, over 200,000 monthly readers. I mean, it is just explosive. And EDA is part of that, you know, because everybody is looking at doing their own chips or doing their own chips. And all these people are going to buy IP, right? They're not going to make their own IP in their first two or three iterations. And so it really is good news. And I don't see a big, you know, falling off the cliff like some people. But I think EDA will continue to grow, maybe not, you know, double digits the way it has, but it really will continue to grow, you know, for the next few years to come. And I'm happy to be a part of it. Well, that concludes our 100th episode. Mike, I have to just thank you so much. I couldn't have done this without you. You're an excellent producer, editor, and everything else that goes into these podcasts. And, you know, it really has made an impact on the industry. I get a lot of comments, a lot of compliments, a lot of phone calls and emails from outside sources that have never even heard of EDA IP semiconductors. So it has been an endeavor, definitely worthwhile. And I want to thank you again for all of your help.
Oh, I appreciate it, Dan. It's been a great ride. It's been a lot of fun. And just being able to reach a larger audience and have the fold grow and have more people know what this industry is capable of is very gratifying for me. And it's been wonderful to collaborate with you on this. You've created a tremendous platform with SemiWiki to bring this to the market and to really extend the reach of the wonderful things going on in the EDA and IP industry. It's been a lot of fun and it's been very gratifying to get it done. And I appreciate the opportunity. It's great. So here's to another 100 episodes. And I wonder what we'll talk about on the 200th episode.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.